Welcome to Nature's Voices. I'm Marlo Shammy, the host. What is permaculture? How is permaculture making a real difference in the health of the planet as well as the people consuming foods grown in the permaculture tradition? Permaculture is not just about farming and gardens. It's about sustainable living. And today we're going to hear from Bob Brown, a member of the newly formed Northwest Connecticut Permaculture Community. I'm so glad you could come in and talk with us about permaculture. We have not had a show discussing this topic, and I understand that you recently started this along with the Northwest Conservation District. So welcome. I'm glad you could join us.
Well, thank you very much, Marlo. It's a pleasure to be on, and I love to talk about permaculture.
Why did your group form?
Well, we have a small group, the Northwest Connecticut Permaculture Community. It's a very informal group. A group of us have been getting together now for about 18 months. Cynthia Rabinowitz, who is the executive director of the Northwest Conservation District, started collecting names of people who were interested in permaculture, and then decided that we had enough of a core to get together and start having meetings. And we've been meeting every month, talking about permaculture, sometimes at the Northwest Conservation District headquarters in Torrington. Other times we go to different people's homes and see the various permaculture projects they've been working on. A lot of really interesting stuff.
Going on right here in the Northwest corner now, yeah?
Oh, it's amazing. Cynthia and Stuart, they have a home now. They have no lawn at all, so they don't have to mow.
My dream.
Yes, mine too. And it's just beautiful. You walk in there and there are foods you can forage all over their property. They grow mushrooms. They have a ton of different types of fruits and berries on their property. Just absolutely amazing. And yeah, I look at that and I say, this is how I want to retire.
Exactly.
I don't have a lawn to mow, and I can go out and I can forage stuff. I say, even if my back's too creaky or something for annual gardening, I can go pick berries.
Talking about the kinds of foods one would grow in a permaculture garden, some of our listeners probably aren't familiar with the concept. Could you describe permaculture?
Permaculture is about working with nature for the benefit of the earth and humanity. Permaculture has a prime directive, and that is the only ethical decision is to take responsibility for our existence and that of our children. So it's about taking personal responsibility for our place on the planet.
You know, that reminds me that this came up in a discussion yesterday. So we're talking about progress being redefined where we include not only our species, but also the earth that we depend on in the formula for progress, so to speak, or development.
Permaculture is all about that. We have to take into account the earth, and it's basically directed by ethics, and permaculture has three ethics. The first one is care of the earth. The second one is care of people. Third one is setting limits to population and consumption, which makes very much sense because we live on a finite planet. We can't overconsume. We can't consume the planet.
Recycling, then, is a big part of permaculture.
Recycling is a huge part of permaculture. You want to return everything, and nature works in cycles. So leaves fall, they improve the soil, and everything works in a loop and a pattern of cycles. So one of the things you want to do if you're interested in permaculture is start to observe nature and make some observations of how nature actually works.
That alone, too, is a very medicinal type of prescription, because we're finding out there's a science behind so-called tree hugging or absorbing nature and being very calm, and it has to do with chemistry and our interface with nature. I won't even go into the science because I only have viewed the top of the iceberg from my perspective. But as you say, observing nature and how it operates has so many benefits alone. And of course, when we truly observe, it's pretty incredible what's going on out there.
Oh, definitely. I've seen many of the same articles discussed where talking about bathing yourself in nature and how it calms people, brings them down from the pressures of our modern world and getting away from technology. And I'm an engineer myself, so I'm involved very much in technology. But I think it's very good to step away from that and get into the real world, because the screen you're looking at is not the real world. The real world is trees and grass and the sky and so forth. A simple example of working with nature that you could use that is a small example of permaculture is, let's say you want to grow blueberries. A lot of people love blueberries. But what you find if you put down a monocrop of blueberries, which just means one crop, a whole bunch of blueberry bushes, you'll find the birds come and eat most of the blueberries. That's very frustrating. So you can either fight against that, and you can put noisemakers, you can put things to scare away the birds. You can try putting netting over the blueberries, but it's a lot of netting if you have a lot of blueberries. Big problem. But if you take a permaculture approach to it, you can plant mulberries along with your blueberries. In other words, the start of what we call a polyculture, multiple types of plants in one area. Mm-hmm. You'll find that the birds come and they mostly eat the mulberries because they love mulberries, and mulberries are in season through all the different types of blueberry plants. Yeah, so they start early. The birds eat those. The birds actually fertilize the ground when they're around. So that's a good thing. And you get to eat your blueberries.
Yeah.
And maybe you get an occasional mulberry too, which is actually a pretty yummy plant.
You've touched on it. If you could talk a little bit more about some of the defining characteristics of permaculture versus conventional. I know there are probably a lot of home gardeners out there that think that I just need to head on down to the local store and pick up my fertilizer and my pesticide and I've got my formula. Things work out okay. You could save time and money, right? With permaculture?
Oh, definitely. Permaculture would not, you don't want to use a lot of inputs. You don't certainly need fertilizers. Plants have symbiotic relationships with each other. Mm-hmm. So certain plants actually fertilize the ground. Mm-hmm. And these are, sometimes they're weeds, sometimes they're other types of plants. For instance, clover will put nitrogen into the ground around it. Other legumes or bean-type plants put nitrogen into the ground. The Eleagnus species, one of which is a gumi, which is a very nice plant. You can use that as a companion plant with other plants. It will help fertilize the soil by drawing nitrogen out of the air, and it puts it into the ground because the roots develop a relationship with bacteria in the ground. This helps the plant next to the gumi grow. And I've experimented with that and found, okay, wherever I planted a gumi, if I put something next to it, that seems to grow faster than if I put that other plant by itself. So there are also plants that are what are known as nutrient accumulators that bring various different things, phosphorus, magnesium, calcium, up from the soil to the surface. Mm-hmm. They have deep tap roots that draw down and collect minerals. They like the minerals. Those plants, for instance, comfrey is a favorite permaculture plant. As they decay, they increase the organic matter and the nutrient content of the soil. Improving the nutrient content means that your food that you derive from that soil has more nutrition in it.
Massive industrial agriculture, oftentimes the soil is pretty much depleted. So even though the food, the vegetables and produce that comes from such growing looks great, it might not have a third of what you would get if you were to grow it with the permaculture methods?
Yes.
Am I exaggerating?
No, I've seen studies now that have said, and I'm a baby boomer, so my youth was back in the 60s, that back in the 60s, the tomato that you bought in the store has twice the nutrition that a tomato has now. Mm-hmm. They've bred them so that they are basically rubber tomatoes.
Yeah, it's
they can easily be handled and they don't bruise as easily and so forth. But because the soils continually get depleted, they have less and less nutrition. So modern agriculture tends to just dump fertilizer or derived from fossil fuel use into the soil. And to replace a well-rounded soil with organic matter and lots of nutrients in it. Mm-hmm. Permaculture is also oriented more towards perennial type plants. One of the things that you want to do in permaculture is observe nature. And if you look around New England especially, you go for a hike in the forest here, a lot of times people will look and say, hey, there's this rock fence in the middle of the woods here. What's it doing here? And somebody who knows the history area will probably tell you that, yeah, one time this was cleared And typical agriculture was being performed here, so they moved all the rocks and created a fence. And now it's recovered and a forest has grown up around it. Well, you can observe then that in New England, things naturally want to go to forest. So if you want to work with nature, then you can create what we call a food forest or an edible forest garden. And basically, you help nature create a forest that is wonderful for foraging in. I believe Andy Dobos has a foraging program here earlier in the year that I attended. And, you know, you have to look around quite a bit to find things to forage.
Yeah.
If you create a forest garden, essentially you're walking in and you're tripping over things that you can forage.
Yeah.
You may have nuts in the trees. You'll have berries all over the place. You'll have a low ground layer with various different edibles. You can also incorporate mushrooms and things like that into it. So that is going to stay for a long time with minimal maintenance. So I always look at it as that's a way, you know, for me, it was a way to think about, hey, that's how I'm going to invest for my retirement, because I'll have something that doesn't need much maintenance in the future as I get older, and I can go and pick nuts and berries.
You're a tall guy. That'd be a lot of bending, all that weeding and all that.
Yes.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Nature's Voices, a show produced by White Memorial Conservation Center. I'm talking with Bob Brown, a member of the Northwest Connecticut permaculture community. Why does produce we purchase at the chain supermarkets often look fabulous, but falls short on taste and nutrition? Why does integrating ancient food growing and living methods make sense in this day and age? How is permaculture redefining the concept of progress? Let's pick up with why it makes sense now more than ever in our history to be paying attention to this type of farming, permaculture.
Well, it's even more than farming. I mean, it applies to everybody's lives, and everybody can implement it on their own properties. At this point, we're really overshooting in terms of the Earth's capacity to support the population, the level of consumption of resources that we do. So if you follow permaculture principles and try to recycle everything through your life, you'll find you reduce consumption. And basically, over the long haul, by following these practices, you can reduce your consumption, increase your quality of life, eat better food, and you can leave a gift for future generations, because the perennial agriculture systems that you create, your food forests and so forth, they will be here long after certainly I'm gone, and they can be here for generations to come in the future. It'd be a wonderful gift to future generations, and it's something that we should really be looking at doing now, reducing our consumption, because we live on a finite planet.
Right. When it comes to water, oil, even fertile soil, although that is something we can maintain.
Yes, permaculture practices, actually a lot of it is about harvesting water and maintaining the soil, the integrity of the soil. Very, very valuable things. And we are in this country depleting the soil. A lot of our agricultural soil ends up in the Gulf of Mexico. Not a desirable place for it if you want to be able to support the population that we have.
Really dramatic example of how permaculture can impact the soil itself, a project called Greening the Desert. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that is one of the first things many people see as an example of permaculture. A fellow by the name of Jeff Lawton, who was appointed by Bill Mollison, who was basically permaculture's founder, as kind of Bill's right-hand man and heir apparent to the Permaculture Research Institute. And Jeff started this project with a whole team of people in the desert of Jordan. And he took an area where they only get a few inches of rain a year and built this lush green oasis. Truly amazing videos that you can see where they developed the land to the point they actually had mushrooms growing in the understory. And nobody in Jordan had ever seen mushrooms before. But they managed to retain moisture in the soil and they built it up. So there are a series of videos that you can see if you do a search for Jeff Lawton and Greening the Desert. They're absolutely awe-inspiring. Amazing work that they did there. One is a timeline for over 10 years, which basically shows desert, are looking very, very barren. And then you see this lush green land. And it's become an education center for people there learning to perform these practices on their own. So wonderful project, you know, giving hope to a lot of people there and giving these people a chance to copy and perform the same things on their own property around that area.
That's very powerful tools. And I'm glad you mentioned Bill Mollison and essentially the founder of the what we call the permaculture movement. I know that indigenous tribes and peoples for eons have practiced probably similar, if not the same, concepts. How did Bill finally pull it all together? Did he do some research? He's in Australia, yeah?
Yes, he's down in Australia, or he was. Passed away recently. Yes, he studied indigenous peoples and what they were doing and how they were working with the land. And gradually he put together a theory of how to do this stuff and worked with a fellow by the name of David Holmgren, who was a student of his. Bill wore many, many hats during his life, and at one point he was a teacher. David was a student, and they came out with a book called Permaculture One. David Holmgren went off and he basically decided he was going to live the permaculture lifestyle and be an example. Bill went more into the educational area and toward the world, trying to educate people about permaculture, finding other places where they've done permaculture-like work, documenting it for people. You can still find videos that Bill did. There's a and I forget the name, unfortunately, but out in California, there's a village that basically was permaculture designed. The houses are very high property values.
Is it in Davis, California?
Davis, yes.
My brother-in-law and sister live there, and I can't remember the name, but he always they're on Buckleberry Lane, but he talks about it being the first.
Yeah, they designed this little village around the principles of permaculture, and it is a wonderful place to live. People don't move out. People who live that really find that they like it and they don't want to leave.
It's interesting, too. We're talking about Jordan and we're talking about California, but you also introduced me to somebody in Holyoke. Now, this is somebody who's doing permaculture in an area that has the same kind of weather you and I experienced in the Northwest Corner, which is pretty chilly in the winter. In fact, it was, you were saying, we were both commenting 20 degrees this morning, if not colder. Tell us about that property.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that is always interesting because people see greening the desert and they say, well, fine, but I live in New England. Does permaculture apply to me? There's a fantastic example of permaculture, and it's also just a great story about two young men. Eric Tonesmeyer and Jonathan Bates. These were two guys who lived in the country. They were really into plants and growing things. And then they realized, they said, you know, we want to meet women, we want to have wives, we want to have families. And he said, we're not meeting many women out in the country here. And so they came up with this plan. They decided to move to into the city somewhere. And they found a duplex in Holyoke, Massachusetts. And in this little urban backyard, they developed this permaculture paradise. They have 200 varieties of plants that is absolutely awe-inspiring. So I was lucky enough to go to visit one of their workshops. It was fantastic. It was just after they came out with a book. They call their backyard Paradise Lot, and the book is also called Paradise Lot. It is a great read and a great introduction to permaculture ideas and so forth. And it's easy, very easy reading.
Hold on one sec. I want to take a quick break and leave people hanging because this is going to be exciting. By the way, folks, we will have a list of the resources on our podcast blast. So if you are hearing this in your car and would like to receive the podcast, I'll give you more information in the show on how to subscribe. We'll be right back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Nature's Voices, a show produced by White Memorial Conservation Center. I'm the host, Marlo Shammy, and I'm talking with Bob Brown, a member of the Northwest Connecticut permaculture community. Is it possible to grow food year-round in New England? With winter's temperatures plunging below zero at times, how could permaculture support a winter garden? In this segment, we'll learn about a diverse, beautiful, and productive one-tenth of an acre. It's a permaculture garden situated within the city of Holyoke, Massachusetts. Tell us more about your experience up there.
Okay.
In Holyoke.
So shortly after the book came out, I found out, okay, this place is actually very close to me. I could go and see it. And I went online and I checked paradiselot.com. They were having a workshop in 1 July, right after the book came out. I said, okay, I have to get up there. Got up there and I drove along and I find that, you know, it's this kind of dingy city lot by my standards. You know, it looks very urban, nothing exciting, a lot of concrete, not impressive. It's not modern looking. It's old city, you know, but then you walk into the backyard and you forget you are in a city. You are surrounded by green. And I never forget the experience when I left of this shock to my system that I'm back on a city street. It reminded me of an experience when I was really young. We were going into the Hayden Planetarium in New York City in the middle of the afternoon, but going into the planetarium and walking in there and being immersed in the night sky. When I walked out of there, I was so shocked to see it was sunny. This was that the only time I've experienced that same type of feeling that, wow, I just switched from one place to the other. And the amazing thing about the story is, as it turns out, at that point, both guys were married and they had toddlers walking around. So they did meet their wives and they did start families. You know, a great friendship between the two guys. It was like a great little community they had. They had a duplex, so they shared this common backyard with all the plants in it. Amazing things on the property. They had small ponds, and they would attract amphibians and so forth that you would never expect to see anywhere in Holyoke.
Right?
Yeah, so they just showed up. Yeah. And the other thing that is fantastic they have on the property is what they call the BioShelter Greenhouse. Now, this was a greenhouse. They made it very, very carefully. Two layers of translucent material, insulated on the north side, got a ton of sun. Internally, they have a big black tub filled with water in which they both grow aquatic plants and they raise fish. So they have a source of protein in the fish that works all winter. They pump water through these various tubs that help hold the heat and retain the heat during the night. And they're growing also various aquatic type plants that are very nutritious. Yeah. And so, again, you have this circulating system of the nutrients the fish leave behind, feeding the plants helping to feed the fish, and beautiful little ecosystem in there. And what they talked about is, okay, on these cold winter days, you can go in there and you're going from, you know, zone 5 into zone 9. So they said, you know, it's beautiful in there. It's warm. It's toasty warm. You go in there and you go and you pick your plants and so forth from there. And maybe you harvest some fish even. Absolutely amazing. In the back behind that, they had a grove of bamboo along the edge of the property. And that's actually where Eric and his wife had their wedding ceremony in front of the bamboo. So, you know, if you love nature, you can't think of a more beautiful place to have a ceremony than that. And you walk around, they have nuts, berries all over the place. Pawpaws, which is a Native American plant.
And that, he said, was very hardy, right?
They're very hardy plants. They will do well here. And I learned at one of our permaculture group meetings that there is somebody in Thomaston who has pawpaw plants, and he brought some pawpaws to the meeting. And they have a nursery in Thomaston.
Is it Cricket Hill?
Cricket Hill Nursery, yes.
I have talked to them. They're corporate members with White Memorial, which is another hat I wear. That's good to know because I want to buy a pawpaw tree. Thank you for that information.
Yes. They sell a variety of pawpaw trees, and he brought some to one of the meetings. And it was the first time at that meeting where I actually got to try a fresh-picked pawpaw.
What was it like?
Very, very good. Almost dessert-like. You could almost think of it as like a pudding that's slightly more solid, creamy texture, a little bit of apple, almost like a mixture of an apple pudding type thing. Quite yummy. I have some pawpaws growing, but I haven't gotten any produce out of them yet. And I'm really looking forward to that day. You know, Native American plant, very ornamental too.
Yeah.
For people who, you know, are like an ornamental plant. It, very, very nice looking, kind of tropical looking almost. Yeah. And it does have tropical roots, but it is hardy and will grow
up
here.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned yourself, you're growing hazelnuts.
Yes, I was thrilled this year. I had the my first real crop of hazelnuts, where I was able to gather a bunch of them and collected them, roasted them up. Absolutely delicious nuts. You know, fortune would have it, just received on my email that I follow a story about how hazelnuts are great nutrient carriers for older adults. I'm certainly fitting into that category nowadays. Yeah. But the micronutrients contained in hazelnuts are fantastic. I know it was a staple of American Indians. Mm-hmm. Very good protein and also a very good source of healthy fat for you. One of the things that I think American diets lack is healthy fat. A lot of the diets are all about fats, but they're not the healthy fats that come naturally from nuts and things like that, which are absolutely fantastic for you. I know myself on the health issues, I had high cholesterol 10, 15 years ago, and I started eating nuts on a more regular basis, which I always liked, but had gotten away from. And my cholesterol went right down. And now, you know, it's considered perfect. Thinking more about permaculture and developing these systems is just a gift we could give to future generations. And, I'm hoping to be a little tiny piece of that.
You're making a wonderful contribution. I thank you so much, Bob, for bringing your enthusiasm to Nature's Voices. I hope we can talk again.
I certainly would love to.
Excellent. Take care.
Thank you.
If you'd like to learn more about the Northwest Connecticut Permaculture Community, contact Cynthia Rabinowitz. She's the Executive Director of the Northwest Conservation District and founder of the group, www.nwcd.org. As White Memorial Conservation Center's Community Outreach Coordinator and host of Nature's Voices, it's my job to inspire new and old friends of the natural world to remember we are indeed a part of nature. We have an infinite variety of avenues to explore right here, outside our homes and workplaces. And of course, you're welcome to explore White Memorial's 4,000-acre wildlife sanctuary anytime. It's absolutely gorgeous here. You will benefit in unexpected ways. Visit our website to check out upcoming programs and sign up to receive White Memorial Conservation Center's weekly free e-newsletter, The Habitattler. Go to whitememorialcc.org, and I promise you we will not share your email address with anyone. You'll just hear from us first thing Monday morning. A big thanks to Nancy Tucker, who composed and performs our show's theme music. If you'd like to listen to Nature's Voices whenever you please, wherever you please, subscribe to the podcast by emailing me, marlo@whitememorialcc.org. In that email blast once a month, you'll also get links to resources and information about the topic of the show that month. Till our paths cross again, make sure you get out there and enjoy the restorative energies of the natural world.